This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Today on the Breakfast Grill, I'm talking to David Lau, the Asia Pacific General Manager for the cryptocurrency platform Luno. David, let's start with a market-driven question and the fact that Bitcoin used to be known as a safe haven, kind of like tracked gold prices, but since last year, I think around about November, this correlation actually disappeared because now instead of tracking safe assets like gold, it now tracks high-risk tech names, i.e. so-called risky assets. When, in your opinion, why did this divergence happen?
Thanks, Koo, for having me here. I think contrary to popular beliefs where most people equate Bitcoin to digital gold, that's not necessarily the case. While Bitcoin has characteristics similar to gold in terms of limiting its supply, coupled with a high demand where people, investors rather, position it as an alternative to main assets, it also has, the price is also driven also by the adoption of the technology in general, as well as lots of speculative trading, especially in the new adoptions of new methods of using cryptocurrency in general over the past 1 year. So last year, generally, the market has always been fueled by the adoption of new technologies in cryptocurrency, such as decentralized finance. We see cryptocurrency for the first time being adopted as a means for to borrow and lend. And that has complicated the way we view cryptocurrencies in general and how we use it, and Bitcoin especially. Also for the fact that there is a new use case in cryptocurrency, such as using crypto as a way to sell digital arts. And that has also, turned Bitcoin into a slightly different way of using cryptocurrency in general. So I think I think while blockchain just continue to adopt to increase its use cases, the way we view cryptocurrencies, especially an asset class like Bitcoin, is starting to shift, moving from just purely looking at it as a digital gold. We're also starting to, I think it's more appropriate to use it, see it as a adoption of new technology instead.
Okay, so where Malaysia is concerned, I think obviously Luno is represented, I read, in some 40 countries around the world. And of course, you are also an investment of a larger group called Digital Currency Group, DCG, right? Now, just staying on Malaysia for the time being, we have seen that Malaysia continues to be quite a mature market where cryptos are concerned, but it's also drawn the interest of quite a lot of big players. And I want to cite the fact that Binance bought Chengpeng Zhao's, CP Zhao's company, bought a stake in I think, MX Global, as opposed to yourselves. Why do you think that happened? Did you talk to them? Were they keen? What were they keen on? I mean, just in terms of some of the background involved in the Binance investments in MX Global.
It's hard for me to comment exactly what happened in the background for MX Global because I'm not privy to the discussion that happened there.
Did they look at Malay? Did they talk to Luno at all? Did they?
Well, from my observation, I think Binance or even other global exchanges such as Crypto.com have always looked at Malaysia as one of the expansion plans. I know that Binance has always, were really interested in Malaysia so because they have a large number of users from Malaysia that's using their global exchange. So it's no surprise to us that they've, apart from Luno, they've decided to look at other crypto exchanges that's regulated in Malaysia to invest. We've never spoken to Binance. I think it's because we're owned by a digital currency group that owns behemoths in the US, such as Genesis and Grayscale. So I don't think that possibility was ever there. And we wouldn't be interested as well because, we are backed by DCG. So it's not a surprise to us that Binance has looked into other crypto exchanges in Malaysia. And in this case, MX Global, has been the beneficiary of that interest.
Yeah, so just in terms of where your business is concerned, I mean, some of the other markets are obviously a bit more mature than Malaysia. In certain cases, I think they've got up to 25 pairs, fiat-linked pairs with other tokens as well. But in Malaysia, you only restricted to 4 tokens. Now, some people say that Malaysia is over-regulated. It is over-restrictive in practices. And that's the reason why you've only got 4 tokens on offer in Malaysia. Now, of course, this whole issue has been complicated by the fact that the Securities Commission, which is obviously the regulator for yourselves in the Bitcoins, in the crypto space, has now seen a change of guard with the resignation of the executive chairman. So those things come in and muddy the picture where the expansion of the crypto market is concerned. What are your comments?
I don't think the change of guards in the Securities Commission will affect in the way regulators regulate cryptocurrency in Malaysia, if I can be fair. Because we, I think the SCs from a regular perspective, they've always looked at investor protection as the forefront in introducing new crypto assets in Malaysia. We do recognize that we have a lot less cryptocurrency compared to other major players. But I think it's also prudent for us to first recognize that cryptocurrency was just regulated in Malaysia late 2019. So that's just a few years ago. We are always in constant conversation with regulators on the market development. So I think it's a game of balance. We want to bring crypto to the masses. We are the largest player in Malaysia, but we also don't want to be overly aggressive to a point where we bring technologies that hasn't been tested with time to the Malaysian hands and exposing them to the risk of the technology going to nil in 5 years. So I think it's a balancing act that we're playing, but we definitely recognize that we need to do a much better job introducing more crypto to Malaysians.
Yeah, some people say that Malaysia is too slow and it doesn't recognize the potential or how it works in terms of its in terms of what it means. For example, when you look at some of the other asset exchanges within the DCG group, Kraken is much bigger, much wider, much more liquid than yourselves, and they're going much further. You see things like FTX coming up with Sam Bankman-Fried as well, and very mature, and making huge forays into the crypto world. And Malaysia's too slow, and you can see this, for example, maybe with the change of guard at the SC. You can also see them with the introduction of the IEO, initial exchange operator, which seems to indicate that they don't really know how the world of decentralized finance works, because IEOs add another layer of complexity to the whole space. Now, what are your views on that?
Again, I'll be careful to say that we are too slow, because I think ultimately, if you're a crypto investor, when you're exposed to the world of decentralized finance, with so many new innovations come on a daily basis, you have a leaning towards feeling like Malaysia's not catching up. But at the end of the day, I think it's also important to recognize that, or appreciate rather, right, that there are certain processes and certain market validation, right, that needs to happen before ultimately regulators can come to the picture and say, hey, look, let's regulate, DeFi's or even IEOs. So I think that's one. That's first thing first.
David, the thing is with cryptos, the whole idea of cryptos is the disintermediation of players, right? And that's why it's called decentralized finance. With Malaysia introducing an IEO, that's re-centralizing of finance, because it is just reintroducing the idea of a merchant bank or an investment bank into the crypto space, which seems to indicate that the regulators don't know how decentralized finance seems to operate. Now, is that a concern that you might share?
No, I don't think so. I definitely don't think so. Because I think at the end of the day, the regulators, again, from my perspective, the regulators do recognize this. They do understand, these technologies. In fact, I think I dare say, right, that both regulators in BNM and SC have already, right, experimented on their personal capacity in terms of employees into looking into all these things and keeping tap on what the market movement, right? But I think it's a little bit more complex than just saying, okay, right, there's a market demand for a certain asset class in crypto. There's a new crypto in town, for example, Solana or any other new blockchain that came in to the picture over the last 2 years, to just put a switch on and say, hey, let's regulate it, let's enable it. Because regulators' duties at the end of the day, right, is to also safeguard financial market. With the advent of internet, it's very easy for people to move money in and out of cryptocurrency and move it across the world. So I think they want to play a very, very careful role to make sure that while they enable innovation, how do we enable in a way where at least at a minimum, they can mitigate any risk of illicit activities that flows through these new technologies. And I think we want to play that role as well, because at the end of the day, ultimately, we're in a long-term game, right? We want to earn trust for a long, long time. So we want to collaborate with regulators to make sure that that is the case before we introduce new crypto assets to Malaysians.
Well, that's the thing. So you've only got 4 coins right now, your Bitcoins, your Ethers. I think you've got Lite and XRP, but you don't have anything else. And that's a big omission on your part, because that indicates that you don't are unable to expand the market further. And the thing is with SC, and especially with the SC, they are financial market, not just regulators, but also developers. Now, that seems an inherent challenge where you are concerned.
I wouldn't say it's a challenge, right? I think it's rather a hurdle that we collectively have to get through together. We are definitely looking to add more tokens, right? So I'm not saying that we're not going to add more tokens. 4 is definitely not enough for us. We do want to get it to a number where we feel that it's a lot balanced. compared to global competitors. But ultimately, I think we do what the market needs to locally that makes sense for the market. So we have spoken and collaborated with the regulators very, very well in that aspect. And we do expect to make a better progress on that front moving forward.
So when do you think these new products might come into play? And bearing in mind that Malaysia is just next door to Singapore, and Singapore, where crypto is concerned, is a very, very open marketplace. They've even got debit cards, which are crypto-based in nature, and that's something that Malaysians cannot even fathom. We've also seen how over there, you've got players like Binance moving around very freely. In Malaysia, Binance is banned, for example. That's troublesome.
Again, I'll be careful to again compare Malaysia with Singapore, right? Because I think the way cryptocurrencies are regulated in Malaysia, Singapore is vastly different. I think in Malaysia, it's regulated under the Securities Commission, right? So it's largely viewed as an asset class. The use case for payment hasn't really come up yet in Malaysia compared to Singapore, who regulates it under the Payment Services Act. I think that's one. But I think in terms of expanding the use case of crypto, that we'll definitely see it sometime this year. Like I said, we are working very, very closely with regulators in the background, but until something is confirmed, we can't really announce it. But we do foresee it very, very soon where we can finally share some good news with Malaysians with regard to accessing more different kinds of cryptos that are widely acceptable on a global stage.
We're talking this morning to David Lau, the Asia-Pacific General Manager for the cryptocurrency platform Luno. We'll come back after this, David, and talk about your company's expansion plans and, of course, the evolution of the cryptocurrency landscape. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Good morning and thanks for staying with us on The Morning Run. This morning, I'm talking to David Lau, the General Manager for Asia Pacific at the cryptocurrency platform Luno. Now, just in terms of the operating metrics within your platform and, of course, the usability of your platform, some people say that across, obviously there are four crypto exchanges in Malaysia, MX is one, Synergy is another, yourselves, and I think there's one more as well. But some people say that the price of Bitcoin on your platform is slightly more expensive than the rest. So again, why that premium? There's also been some complaints, maybe also some reservations about access or too easy access to KYC data from your internal parties. Maybe security could be better. I mean, how would you respond on those, few fronts?
So I think the two things here, right, I'll probably just address the premium price in Bitcoin first. So the premium price of Bitcoin isn't actually because of four different exchanges in Malaysia. Rather, I think it's driven largely because of the demand and supply factors, of Bitcoin in Malaysia versus global. Now, in Malaysia, Luno operates an order book that's solely confined within Malaysians or residents of Malaysia. So what that means is when you trade on Luno, you're actually trading with another fellow resident of Malaysia within Malaysia, compared to, let's say, if you trade on Binance, where the order book is exposed to the world to the customers globally, right? So as a result, because Luno has capabilities for Malaysians to cash in and cash out with ringgit, demand of Bitcoin being spiking has actually created this price discrepancy, which is actually not a bad thing because when there is price discrepancy, there's opportunities for arbitrage, there's opportunities for trade, and that has actually resulted in some positive news for traders who seek to profit from the price differences of Bitcoin between Malaysian exchanges as well as global exchanges. So I think that's one. Now on the second one, in terms of customer data security in KYC, we do request customers' information for the purposes of complying with regulations. But I want to assure that Malaysian customers' data is actually very, very secure with us. We've never revealed this information to third parties. Data are stored proprietary within Luno, and we do not share this data with any of our vendors at all. So I think Malaysians can be rest assured that their data is safe and secure with Luno.
The other thing also is that a lot of exchanges and a lot of wallets, they tend to be quite prone to hacking, right? And that's why a lot of people are told when they open their accounts, do not hold their coins on the exchange or on their wallet. They've got to go cold, right, and hold a ledger for security. That's the current standard practice. What is the case with, for example, yourselves? Do you plan to launch, wallets or cold ledgers maybe in future? And what is the regulation around that?
There's actually no regulation around how you store your cryptocurrency. So it's just like there's no regulation on how you store your own assets in Malaysia. A lot of customers do store their crypto with us, and how we store it is slightly different from how other exchanges do it. We actually store customers' cryptocurrency in three different layers of security. So we have the hot wallet, which is basically a wallet that's connected to the internet, and we have another two layers of cold wallet or a cold storage where it's disconnected from the internet. So what that means is, if you're a Luno customer, if you store your crypto with us, only a very small portion of cryptocurrency is stored on a hot wallet. That's purely for us to fuel liquidity on our exchange. And the rest of more than 90% of your cryptocurrencies are actually stored offline, that are also where we've also built like multiple layers of security around it to make sure that Luno, even Luno ourselves, can't access these wallets without authentication by a trusted third party. So we built all these securities in place to store customers' cryptocurrency. Now, a lot of times why people's crypto in other exchanges are compromised, or even sometimes in Luno, right? We have customers complaining to us that they have lost their funds. It's largely because of unauthorized access by hackers or phishers who managed to gain access into their account after stealing their identity or their password online. So I think to mitigate that, we always encourage Malaysian customers to implement what we call a two-factor authentication. So what that means is that you can install a Google Authenticator that generates a 60-second password. And whenever you log in into the Luno platform, alongside your username and password, you also have to input a 60-second password that's generated by a third-party app such as Google Authenticator in order to gain access to the account. And I think with all these measures, if you put all these measures in place, the risk of it being accessed by third party is vastly mitigated all the way down, unless the hacker steals your actual phone device in order to gain access to your cryptocurrency. But having said that, you can transfer your crypto from Luno into a cold wallet. That's fine. There's lots of hardware wallet that's out available in the market that people can access to, and that's something that we also encourage. If someone comes to us and asks about it.
Talking this morning to David Lau, the Asia Pacific General Manager for the cryptocurrency platform Luno. Now, also still on the platform, there's been some reservations about the utility of your platform, where it's not the order book procedure that is involved. When you go through the standard procedure to buy Bitcoin or to buy Ethereum, the transaction fees are very, very high, contrasting with, say, maybe a Synergy, for example, which are very, very low in relation to Luno. Why is it that you're charging such high transaction fees?
Yeah, so we actually have two different products, or what we call two different features for Malaysian users to buy cryptocurrency. We have an order book. We do have an order book, and that can be easily accessible via the app. If you go to the top right corner, you can actually switch your app to an exchange. So if you access the exchange, you get to enjoy a much cheaper price. In fact, I think it's at a max 0.6%, and it goes all the way down to 0.2%, depending on your trading volume. So if you want to buy cryptocurrency through Luno and access it cheaper, you can go to the exchange directly. But we also have what we call the instant buy-sell feature.
Yeah, that's the expensive one, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's the expensive one where we charge 2%. So we provide that feature mostly to retail traders who don't want to go through the exchange and having to do a lot more work to buy Bitcoin, right? So if you go to the exchange, for example, you have to set a price, you have to set a limit order, you have to set the quantity, and you have to wait for your orders to get fulfilled just like any other exchange. But with the what we call the instant buy-sell feature, it's actually an automated trading bot that helps you fetch the best price from the exchange and fill up your order in ASAP. And with that added service, if you just want to buy, like, let's say 5 ringgit or 10 ringgit of cryptocurrency, what's 2% for a 10 ringgit charge? That's very minimal for the effort that you have to put in if you go to exchange. So the product is actually built for two types of users, I'd say. If you're a retail customer looking to buy less than $100, feel free to use the instant buy sell where, instantly, right? If you perform one single order, you get your orders immediately, albeit at a slightly higher charge. But if you're a large volume trader, most of the time, they go to the exchange where they get to enjoy cheaper fees depending on trading volume.
Yeah, the only thing that approach disenfranchises and maybe even penalizes novice or first-time users to your platform, maybe to the detriment of Luno over the long term.
No, I wouldn't say so, because at the end of the day, ultimately, for us to enable instant, what you call it, instant buy sell, there are added operational costs to it. Like any other businesses, everything has to work within a margin, right? So it might look like a very high charge, but we understand that, you know, at the end of the day, we do see a lot of our customers wanting that ease of accessing cryptocurrency in and out very, very quickly within a second. So that that we've built that bot trading bot in order to enable that so that people have a much better experience getting into out of crypto, especially when price moves very quickly. But we also allow access into the exchange very, very quickly. It's just a simple interface change on the top right corner of the app. And we've never hidden that feature at all. So I wouldn't say that, you know, we are disfranchising, you know, investors from investing into crypto. Rather, you can choose, right, which option is best suited for you, depending on your trading volume, and as well as you know, your appetite in investing in cryptocurrency in general.
Yeah, there's also some concerns out of your Indonesian user base that there could be a looming tax on cryptocurrency transactions. How would you address those issues?
The tax, if I can be completely honest, I think it took the industry by surprise. No one saw it coming. So the Ministry of Finance in Indonesia has decided to implement taxes when customers buy and sell crypto or even send crypto out of exchanges. There are no easy answers to that. Unfortunately, we just have to pass this cost back down to customers by hiking prices in our exchange fees. And you know, we understand that a lot of our competitors in the market are doing the same as well. But we generally don't agree with the high tax that's imposed, especially on crypto cents. I don't think that will help the cryptocurrency market in Indonesia to grow. So I think the industry as a whole is coming together to propose something different to the Ministry of Finance, coming to the NS industry blog as well, right, to propose something a lot more palatable. That doesn't stifle the growth of the market, but at the same time also meets the goals of the Ministry of Finance in Indonesia.
Yeah, what is the comparison in terms of the Malaysian experience and the Indonesian experience and also the Singapore experience? Singapore seems to be so much more liberal and so much more embracing of crypto.
I think it boils down to how each government views cryptocurrency right now. I think in case of Indonesia, they view cryptocurrency as a very mature market, which is
far from the truth. Sorry, one more time. They view cryptocurrency as a mature market?
As a mature market in terms of trading volume, compared to regulators, say, in the likes of Malaysia and Singapore, that often views crypto as more of a nascent market in terms of trading volume, which is still the case in most markets globally. So I think because regulators in Indonesia, or rather the Ministry of Finance, sees crypto as a very mature market. And then they felt, okay, it's time for us to start imposing a lot more taxes because we don't think this will stifle, again, the growth of the crypto industry. I think obviously, government is also always looking for more ways to increase taxes as well.
Yep.
So yeah, that different approach has resulted in different treatment of how they see cryptocurrency in each market.
Yeah, just very quickly, David, because we've got about a minute left. Just in terms of what you can, give a sneak peek to customers, what kind of coins, what kind of tokens can customers expect in the year ahead? Does that include maybe some staking products as well? Altcoins maybe? What can you say on that front?
I can't say too much at the moment because, again, until these products are approved by regulators, I'm not able to comment on that. But I think definitely customers can look forward to more top 10 globally traded tokens in Luno. That's something that I can say for sure. Staking is still up in the cards because it's a lot more complex in terms of how we implement these things in the market. But again, it's something that we're also looking at very, very closely and also having conversations with regulators as well on this. So definitely at least the top 10 tokens is something that they can look forward to in the next 1 year.
Okay, David, thanks so much for your time. That was David Lau, Asia Pacific General Manager for the cryptocurrency platform Luno, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.